Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT. Bandwidth for the Tech Guy is provided by CacheFly. CacheFly.com. Hi, this is Leo Laporte, and this is my Tech Guy podcast. This show originally aired on the Premier Networks on Saturday, December 6th, 2014, a day that will not live in infamy. This is episode 1,141. Enjoy. The Tech Guy podcast is brought to you by Gazelle, the fast and simple way to sell your used gadgets. Find out what your used iPhone, iPad, or other Apple product is worth at gazelle.com. And by Blue Apron. Blue Apron will send you all the ingredients to cook fresh, delicious meals with simple step-by-step instructions right to your door. To see what's on the menu this week and get your first two meals free, go to blueapron.com/twit. That's blueapron.com/twit. And by FreshBooks, the number one cloud accounting solution that helps millions of entrepreneurs and small business owners save time and billing and get paid faster. Try it free at FreshBooks.com/TechGuy and join over 5 million users running their businesses hassle-free. Well, hey, how are you today? Leo Laporte here, the Tech Guy. Time to talk about, should we talk about gardening? No. Home improvement? No. How about your digital life improvement? It's technology time. 8888-ASK-LEO is the number. I'm sure I burnt that into your brain by now. 888-827-5536. That's toll-free from anywhere in the U.S. or Canada. Outside those specific North American regions, you may use Skype or some other voice-over internet thingamajig and call us. We'll be glad to take your call. Heather Hammond, our phone ranger, will answer it. Prepare you for your debut to the world. Computers, the internet, home theater, anything with a chip in it. Our home theater expert, Scott Wilkinson, joins us momentarily, about half an hour from now, to talk about some home theater topic. I want to talk to him about live music. Oh, boy. Speaking of music, it ain't going too well for the Apple iPod lawsuit. I'm not sure where I sit on this one. I'm not a big fan of class action suits, you know, 20 years later or whatever. But there's a class action suit, or there was a class action suit going on over the iPod. And you and everybody who has an iPod has been bit by this. But you've got an iPod, and it has been connected to a computer, usually a Mac or PC via iTunes. Well, actually, in the earliest days, that was it. Originally a Mac, and then eventually a Mac and a Windows machine via iTunes. And that was how you got stuff on the iPod. And you may remember, I'm sure this has happened to you, that if you connect your iPod to another computer, and it's iTunes, the iTunes will say, oh, hello, this iPod was connected to another iTunes, is associated with that, and in order for us to synchronize, to copy music from this machine, we need to erase everything on the iPod. Now, that's annoying. You and I have both been bit by this. Some people have actually, not paying attention, click yes, and lost their music collection, et cetera, et cetera. Well, for some reason now, here we are. How many years has the iPod's been out? Since 2008? It's been doing that. Since 2001. It's been doing that since at least 2008. The lawsuit says that iPods purchased between 2008 and, I don't know when Apple stopped doing this, 2012, were preventing music from competing services from playing on the iPod because of this. That it was an anti-competitive motion. Actually, it really wasn't. I know what it was because it's pretty obvious. Apple was told by the music industry, the music industry has said this many times, the iPod is the ultimate piracy device. You're allowing people to copy music onto, you know, a 160 gigabyte device and then bring it to their friends. You must put in something that keeps them from connecting it to their friend's computer and copying all the music over. Otherwise, you've just invented a piracy device. So Apple put in this kind of bogus, you got to only connect to the original iTunes collection. You can't connect to other ones. Otherwise, we're going to erase it so you can't steal it, you little thief, you. Most people, I mean, we've been taking calls about this since it happened years ago. And I would just tell people, again, there's other programs, Sanuti, and there's a million programs that will let you open the iPod, copy the music off of it into your iTunes library, and then sync. Because lots of people call up and say, well, what am I supposed to do? I've got a new computer. I don't want to erase my iTunes. It was mostly an inconvenience. Well, something's happened to this class action lawsuit. It was actually going to be interesting because it apparently has been going on long enough that they have a videotaped deposition from Steve Jobs as part of the trial. Jobs passed away 3 years ago. So this has been going on for a while. Now, unfortunately for the suit, they don't have any plaintiffs anymore. See, you can't file a lawsuit just because you're a lawyer. You have to have a damaged party. And they were down to one woman, and she withdrew. She said, "I didn't. You know what? It needed to be that I purchased an iPod between." Here it is, September 2006 and March 2009. And she didn't. And Apple said it checked the serial number of the iPod Touch and found she bought it just a few months after the period in question. Oh, please. But this is how law works, right? The company filed a motion for dismissal. There were only two plaintiffs, both of them. The other one was purchased apparently by the plaintiff's husband's company. So that rules her out. Now, there are some interested parties other than these two, and apparently somebody has contacted the judge and said, hey, I bought an iPod Touch in May 2008. How many iPods were sold between 2006 and 2008? 20 million, 30 million, 100 million? I don't know. Lots. Millions. But they can only find this one guy. I want to see Steve Jobs' videotape deposition. That's what I want to see. Of course, the big story of the week, I'm burying the lead here because the big story of the week is that Sony, I want to say Sony Music, but it's Sony Entertainment. It's movies, it's music, it's everything. Got so severely hacked that everything on the servers at Sony Pictures Entertainment, 40 gigabytes of data has been released out to the public. And this includes, everything. Movies, movie scripts, pilots that have not been made, the salaries of everybody working there, the social security numbers of everybody working there, and everybody who ever has worked there, and on and on and on. People are saying probably the worst corporate hack in history, at least for the people involved, the victims. Christina Warren, writing at Mashable, my good friend, says, as I've written in the past, every person at Sony Pictures Entertainment needs to operate with the understanding that every piece of data stored on the company's internal network has been compromised. Everything. Everything. And a lot of this comes from something that Sony shares with many of us. A certain kind of casualness about security. Sony's security, the folks at Fusion.net found an interview with Sony's security chief a few years ago where she said, yeah, security's not all that important. He said, I'm not going to spend $10 million to protect $1 million worth of data. He said, I'm going to let my employees use any dumb password they want, including password 1234. Yes, all the passwords released. In fact, get this, if you look through the data, which I haven't because I'm not a voyeur, although many have. If you look through the data, among other things, there are files that are called sonypasswords.txt. They were storing logins to secure servers, to FTP sites where movies and screeners were stored in a text file, probably was on somebody's desktop, some executive's desktop, called passwords.txt. Oh, come on. Come on, man. Really good reporting coming out of Kevin Roos and Kashmir Hill over at Fusion.net. Kashmir writes, Sony Pictures hack was a long time coming, say former employees. I mean, really, files. You know what? If you're going to make something hide in plain sight, put the word password in the title of the file. That's a good idea. Everything compromised. Who did it? No one knows. As people are saying, North Korea. I don't buy that. No one knows. Somebody with a sense of humor. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Ms. Ammon.
You want to know who I've groomed.
Ms. Ammon, you've been grooming people, getting them ready for the show, getting those cowlicks in place, taking the shines off their nose. Mm-hmm. Who do we want to start
Kyle
the show
took
with?
A lot of work, but...
Did he? Oh, dear.
He's a handsome man.
Funny looking kid? No, okay.
In Louisville.
Hey, Louisville Kyle, Leo Laporte. Thanks, Heather. The tech guy. Hi, Kyle.
Hi, Leo. How are you?
Welcome.
I have a question with a backup.
Okay.
I am following your advice and using Carbonite. I'm also backing up to an external hard drive.
Mm-hmm.
And Carbonite does it automatically, and I'm using ThinkBack Free for the external hard drive.
Okay.
And what I found is that I had some bad sectors on my hard drive, and it corrupted some of my files.
Mm.
And those files, once they were corrupted, got carried through the backup process.
Mm.
And when I finally realized that I had some bad files and tried to go back to restore them, all of the saved versions were corrupted too.
So it's not really my place to do Carbonite's tech support, but I will give you a pointer. You're on Windows, obviously.
Yeah.
And one of the nice things Carbonite does on Windows is what we call versioning. But obviously, if the corruption's been going on for a while, they aren't going to keep an infinite number of versions.
Right.
And so what's happening is that corruption is corrupting each version going far back. But call them, because it's been my experience, and they're very helpful. The Carbonite support team is excellent. My experience is they have more versions than they display to you. They can go back in there. So one of the things that's cool about Carbonite is... they make backups of the backups. They do whatever, tapes or some sort of long-term storage. And frequently they can go back to versions past the ones that you can see.
Hmm.
So if you're desperate to get this data back, my suggestion is you give them a ring and say, hey, is there, Annie, Leo, tell him, that guy Leo does your ads. He said that you might, in your secret storage locker, have a few older versions than the ones I can see. Yeah, I mean, this is always a problem with any kind of backup, and it's a tough one to solve, and it's odd, frankly, but hard drives, as we know, hard drives have problems from time to time. One of the most common problems is sectors that were good, parts of the hard drive that were good, going bad, and what that would do is not corrupt the whole file, but a portion of the file. Now, if the file's a text file, well, that means that much of it's still readable, but if the file's, a program or... some compressed, there are things that a chunk of it missing is going to mean the whole file is corrupted. And the real problem is it's not that the sector was a bad sector. See, this is the problem. If the sector had gone bad and the drive couldn't read it, that'd be one thing. What's happened is it somehow got trashed. So it's like some little gremlin came into your file and took one part of it and went, and messed it all up. From the point of view of any other program, it's the same, it doesn't know. It can't tell. So it's blithely copying this bad file. And no backup solution is going to be able to help you there. Just hope you have an older version. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hey, that's Scott Wilkinson, our home theater guru. I'm not going to go on and on about the Stevie Wonder concert, but we have talked before about, and I've been getting in fights with people over recorded music because they said, Leo, don't fall for the golden ears, high res music. you know, hoo-ha. That's nobody can hear the difference, especially you at your age. You can't hear the difference.
Your advanced age.
And, yeah. And I agree. It sounds a little bit like voodoo. It's certainly true that there are frequencies in there that I can't hear anymore. And but I do think there are harmonic overtones. There are things that happen at in the audible frequencies that create overtones in the inaudible frequencies that you maybe somehow sense in ways other than your ears. I don't know what it is, and maybe that's airy-fairy.
No. I think there is a lot of basis in reality for that. And you make a good point about how going to a live concert is really the ultimate, and it's the benchmark by which all recordings really should be measured. And there is a greater emotional impact. And there's a lot of research being done now about emotional impact of recorded music, comparing uncompressed music with highly compressed music like MP3, where you throw away 90% of the information that's in that file. And, you know, with brain scans and so on, you can see that the uncompressed music, the lossless music, the music, the recording that has all the data there, has more, it lights up more of the brain's limbic system, the emotional center of the brain, than when you listen to the same thing as an MP3.
And so all I could say is I enjoy it. Maybe I'm dumb. I'm not paying a huge amount more. That's one of the nice things about high res. I'm not going out and buying a special sand tray for my $5,000 turntable.
Right.
It's not that much more expensive. It's a few bucks more for the CDs, and you are at least getting the CDs, the original audio masters uncompressed, in most cases, uncompressed as they came off the tape machine in the final mix. And so what's wrong with that? Come on, at least start with the best possible.
Exactly. In fact, I was going to mention today that a British company by the name of Meridian, perhaps you've heard of it, it's a very high-end audio company, just announced this week a new technology to assure that what you hear is exactly what the artist and producer intended. It's called Master Quality Assured. And it basically is a new way of capturing the original master tape information and encoding it with metadata that basically makes sure that when it's decoded, and you have to have a decoder, it is exactly as it was approved in the studio by the artist when it was finally finished. Now, you don't need the decoder. If you play this, what's called an MQA file, on a regular player of some sort, it doesn't have an MQA decoder, you'll just hear the CD quality sound. But if you do have an MQA decoder, it will play back and you will be absolutely certain that what you're hearing is what the artist intended. And I think that's a pretty interesting idea. I just put a piece on AVS about it, and we're going to hear it at CES. I'm looking very much forward to that. It's a cool thing.
I think that the other thing that's happening in the music industry is that live performances are, in many cases, the only way artists can make money, or at least the majority of their money. So we're going to see more live performances.
Yeah.
And that's not so bad. But the era of recorded music, which is really not much more than 100 years old, has brought music to everyone in every venue, in every way. And I don't think that's a bad thing.
No, I don't either.
And even the lead singer of the Talking Heads, David Byrd, points out that, you know, many of us first heard our first rock and roll songs on tinny transistors under the covers at bed at night, and it still moved us. So there's no question that lousy audio fidelity is okay as well. But, you know, if you can, having the best is great, and seeing and the best yet is getting to see a live show. And
absolutely right. And you know, as you heard, even in not a great venue, it's like kind of the Oakland Coliseum.
Kind of echoey, but...
Well, you were in a good spot. I hope it wasn't too loud for you.
You know what? I was really pleased at first. It was very normal. I almost felt like a concert at somewhere like a symphony hall.
Yeah.
Because he had a symphony orchestra. It was a very full... Man. Sound 30 musicians. Mm-hmm. Sheila E. joined him on stage.
Oh wow! Wow.
So,
well, that must have been an awesome concert, man.
Yeah, it was a party. And you felt like, so at first it was fine, but then there are a few songs where they did blast it. If you could tell they were turning it up, and I'm not sure why they did that. And I don't want to bring earplugs, but I think I should say to every young person, if you're going to a live rock concert or a loud concert, bring earplugs, because I don't know why, but they do crank that volume up.
They do crank it. And one theory is that the engineers who are doing the live sound are deaf because they've been doing
they're
it
deaf.
For so long.
I can't hear. I can't hear. Turn it up.
Now, in particular, they're probably losing their hearing in the 2 to 4 kilohertz range first.
Yeah, that's where it hurts noise. My ear.
Right, but that's also where speech intelligibility lies.
Right.
So when you lose that, you lose the ability to really understand speech. And it also, for an engineer, it means they're going to EQ, they're going to equalize and crank up that frequency range so that it sounds right to them.
Yeah.
And so they're putting everybody in the audience at
even more. Yeah, it's a vicious circle.
I'm afraid so. But be that as it may, protect your hearing because you don't notice the damage for years or decades later, and by then it's too late. On the other hand, there's nothing like live music, as you say, for the emotional impact, for the audio quality.
It's
phenomenal.
So what else is there? What else is new in the home theater space? I didn't really say anything. Scott Wilkinson is the editor-in-chief of the AVS Forum. He does our Home Theater Geeks podcast each and every week, which more and more, by the way, you are gaining more and more fans. More and more people tell me it is the show to listen to on our podcast network. If you are a fan of this kind of talk, audio and video. By the way, this is germane to video, too, because ultimately, whether it's a video game, a movie, a musical piece, What is trying to do is take something that's recorded and give you an experience that's like real life.
That's right.
We're aiming to give you an immersive experience as close as possible to real life.
Yep.
That's what everything is all about.
That's right. And Dolby, in fact, made an announcement this week that I found very interesting. I put it up on AVS as well, that they are going to start putting together premium cinema environments. The first one's going to be in Belgium, and they're going to have Atmos sound system, of course, which actually mimics real life much more than a typical surround system. But what's most important is they're working with a digital cinema projector company by the name of Christie that provides the projectors, the digital projectors, for probably the majority, or at least many, many, many of the digital theaters around. And they're working with them to create a digital cinema projector with what's called high dynamic range, which is the difference between the blackest, darkest parts of the picture and the brightest parts of the picture. And right now, the digital cinema is in the 100 or 200 to 1 range. It's just a ratio. But with high dynamic range, they could reach 1,000 to 1. And that will look much more like real life. Again, we get back to the point of how much does it look like real life. And when you go to the movies now, you know, the black of space is maybe kind of grayish, and you can't really see what's in the shadows too well. It kind of looks like a solid blob. But with this high dynamic range technology, which we should see sometime next year, it's going to look much more like you're looking out a window, or you're just looking at real life. It's going to be phenomenal.
Do they have to replace the projectors, or
yeah,
all right.
Afraid so.
Scott Wilkinson, if you want to see Home Theater Geeks, twit twit.tv/htg. Leo Laporte, the tech guy.
Zonk.
There is a super secret website. Let me turn this guy, this loudmouth, down so that you may continue on.
Oh, thank you so very much.
Yes.
Crucial Wax says, I tend to hope the movies look a lot better than real life. Mine, anyway. That may be. So, yeah, here I am in the chat room. Lovely to see you all. Web0198 says, I have a decoder ring. Will that work? No, afraid not. You need a Meridian MQA. It's not assured. It's authenticated. Oh, dang, I got that wrong. It's Master Quality Authenticated is the actual name of what MQA means. We're going to hear it at CES. I'm really looking forward to it. It also reduces the file size from high-res audio. It's another point I didn't make and should have. Meridian is addressing the issue of convenience versus quality, right? So quality, of course, is uncompressed CD or better, higher resolution than that. And convenience really is attached to MP3s, where you throw away 90% of the information and you get a file that's a tenth of the size. So it's easily downloaded. It can be streamed over not such fast bandwidth. Thousands of songs can be stored in a little device in your pocket. So Meridian is trying to rebalance, the relationship between quality and convenience with this new MQA format, where the file size is smaller than a high-res audio file, but it will give you the true high-res audio quality without compromise, without throwing away any information. So I find it very, very interesting. Yes, Ken Crayley, 20. I am looking forward to CES as well. It's just about a month away now. We got to get through Christmas, of course. And I have to get through Tuba Christmas tomorrow. So anybody in L.A., come out to Tuba Christmas and watch me wave the stick in front of 100 tuba players. We're actually going to get recorded this year by American Public Media, a program called Performance Today. And that show will be aired later in the month. Unfortunately, it is not broadcast in LA, but it is broadcast many other places. So I was interviewed for the show, and they're going to record the concert. It's going to be great. So if you're in LA, go to tubachristmasla.com to see when and where tomorrow night. And we're going to have a lovely time. W. Scott is one asks, what is the highest quality audio file format? The answer is as high as you can get, so to speak. The common high-res format now is 24-bit, 96 kilohertz sampling rate. A few recordings are being made at 192 kilohertz sampling rate. This MQA format from Meridian will handle everything up to a 768 kilohertz sampling rate, which I don't think anybody can do yet, but I think they're planning for the future. Not that you really need that. Given the limitations of human hearing, I and a lot of people believe that 2496, as it's called, 24-bit, 96 kilohertz sampling rate, is more than enough. You really don't need to do anything more than that. And in fact, if you go higher than that in your sampling rate to capture even higher frequencies, you could end up having some problems. The circuitry isn't necessarily stable at those super high speeds. I do know that there are some.
Thank you, Scott. You want to stick around for the top of the hour?
Happy to.
All right. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. 8888 ask Leo, this MQA format that Scott was talking about, very interesting. You can find out more about it at musicischanging.com. It's not out yet. They say it'll be out sometime next year. And I think what's happened is that because bandwidth is going up, more people have high-speed internet connections. It's not the issue it was 10, 15 years ago when MP3s came out. And storage is also capacious and inexpensive. So it's not, you know, we're kind of fighting dragons that don't exist anymore, keeping files so extra small. So we could take a little bit of space back and a lot more quality back. But I love the idea of finding a format of some kind that is certified to recapture the experience in studio. We'll see. Because, of course, you can say, I've got something better, but everybody has to adopt it. And unfortunately, frankly, if you can't play it back on an iPhone or an iPod, it's not going to get that round support that something might need for the record industry to get excited about. Actually, I shouldn't say that, because the music industry, they don't care. As long as they can sell a whole nother round of music, they love this, these new formats, right? You bought it on vinyl, then you bought it on 8-track, Then you bought it on cassette. Then you bought it on CD. Then you bought it on iTunes. You bought the same album, in many cases, five times. And now we're going to do a sixth format? Well, what's wrong with that? Let's start all over again. 8888 Ask Leo. Moving on to Ebony in Pasadena. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Ebony.
Leo, it's actually Benny.
All right. I don't know why I read that as Ebony. Hi, Benny.
It's a, hey, Leo, I'm a frustrated non-smartphone user.
Hey, good news. I just read an article that said the flip phone is coming back. Seriously, hot movie stars have started to move back to flip phones.
Is that right?
Wow. Yeah. Everything old is new again.
Yeah.
I like having a smartphone. You know, I'll tell you the advantage, because you've got a full computer in your pocket.
Right.
With full-time internet access. And once you start using it, and the, you know, you can, you always know where you are. You could find a great restaurant nearby. You can answer a question. You don't have to wait till you get home. You can send an email, quick email. You can send quick texts. All of these things, pictures. They make great cameras. All of these things are so valuable that pretty soon, once you get it, you just, I don't know how you could go back to a flip phone. So, Benny, this is exciting. Welcome to the modern world.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I do have one in mind. I you know, I'm looking at the Note. The Samsung Note.
The new one, the Note 4?
Yeah.
Excellent choice.
Well, what concerns me is you've mentioned junk in the past, that they come junk.
Yeah. Let me address that, because I did not buy a Galaxy S5, by the way. A lot of people didn't, because I've had every Galaxy Note. I've had every Galaxy phone. And Samsung, I'm going to give you a little history. I always do this, and I apologize. A little digression here, my friends. Android, which is an operating system that Google bought and polished, in its earliest days was rough, very rough around the edges. So companies that made Android phones very frequently would customize them to polish those rough edges. Furthermore, if you're Samsung or LG or HTC or one of the myriad, and there are literally hundreds of companies selling Android phones, you're always looking to be something different, something better than the competition. Some of that's hardware, of course, but hey, if you can add a little piece of software that makes it extra good, you're going to do that. And Samsung, of course, does it in spades. Samsung changes Android more than any other company. We sometimes call these customizations skins, because they're putting a new skin on top of Android. And some purists, the geekiest among us, prefer an unskinned, pure Android. Those are the phones that generally that Google sells, the Nexus phones. That's Android as Google intends it. Now, over time, Android's gotten better and better, and I would say Android KitKat, which is the last version, and the current version, Lollipop, Android 5.0, are every bit as good as any of the skinned versions, in some cases much, 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 much better. One of the reasons for skinning to improve Android is gone. There's still the need for differentiation. Even Samsung, though, because people have turned away from the Galaxy S5, I think even Samsung has realized this is the case. The Note 4 is skinned, but not very much. The TouchWiz skin that Samsung puts on there is much less intrusive than it used to be. They have to do some of it to support the stylus. That's one of the few phones that has a stylus, which I think is a big selling point. They also, you know, as with most companies, they replace Google's calendar, Google's keyboard, Google's music player. They put in their own stuff, Google's email. But what Google has done is in response to this is they've offered all of those applications on their store, the Play Store, for free. So you can always bring back the originals if you wish. I would say that there's no reason to stay away from Samsung anymore. I don't think they're junking the phones up as bad as they were. And there are some real advantages to the Note 4. It is easily the best screen out there now. You don't mind a giant phone?
No, not at all.
Yeah, I like it. I carry giant phones because it's my computer. And I find I do more with it because the screen's big. So I think the Note 4 screen is the best in the business. Camera is one of the top two or three. Really, really good camera. The stylus is unique. And there are two other selling features that make the Note 4 very compelling. One, it has an SD card. A lot of the newer phones do not. So you can add storage to it very inexpensively, and you can add a lot. And two, it has a removable battery. And that solves a problem a lot of these big new smartphones have, which is sometimes they can't get through the day, which can be a pain if you're not always near a charger. On the Samsung Galaxy Note 4, I always buy when I get a Samsung phone a second battery. I have two batteries. And I carry it. It's small. It's slim. And when I get to the, 6 o'clock in the evening and I'm out of juice, no problem. Pop in a new one. I get a whole fresh battery. So that's to me, these are all excellent selling points. I think the Note 4 is arguably the best Android phone out there. And I do not in any way discourage you from getting it. It's very, very good.
Leo, if I get a used one, do I have to wipe it clean like a computer?
Well, it depends where you get it. If you get it from your cell phone company or somebody like that, they'll have wiped it. If you get it from a friend, I would absolutely wipe it.
Mm-hmm.
And that's easy to do. In the settings, there's a reset command, and you just hit it, and it takes literally a minute, and it'll put it right back to the factory state. That's much – one of the things you're going to find is that these modern mobile operating systems – are much better than desktop operating systems for stuff like this. They've solved a lot of problems, including security issues, the idea of refreshing the thing by just pressing a button. All of that's much easier.
Okay, so there's no, I could have sworn I read or heard about a loophole, security loophole, a while back.
There are always, you're going to, look, what's happened in the world of blogging, of the world of internet journalism, unfortunately, is there's a real sensationalism out there. People want you to click those headlines. So all security flaws are often overblown to get you to click that link. I read them all. You can listen to me. You don't have to worry. Do not download from KoreanHackerStore.com. Right? Continue. If you download it from the Google Play Store and you don't download weird stuff, be careful about wallpaper programs, stuff like that. But if you're downloading you're not going to do that.
No,
but it's nowhere near the problem it is on desktop computing.
All right. Awesome. Well, thank you so much, Leo, for your
help. I think you're going to like it. I think you're going to like it. I think the Note 4, frankly, I'm in a bit of a conundrum, a quandary. I have, of course, foolishly signed up. I have an account with all the big carriers. I have pretty much all the top smartphones. But I don't want to carry five phones. No one does. I want to carry one main phone. That way you have one number you can tell people and, everything's on that phone. And I am really torn. The Note 4 is one of the two or three phones that I, if it had Android Lollipop on it, I think it would be a no-brainer. But because this is another disadvantage of these skinning solutions, it slows them down when it comes to updating. Because, of course, Lollipop, which came out last month, now has to be vetted with all of the special stuff that Samsung's done to it. They have to make it all work. It's going to be probably a few more months before we get the latest version of Android. And that's a little bit of a painful point for me. On the other hand, SD card, removable battery, awesome. And it is. I mean, I look at all the screens and I look at all the cameras and it is the best. It really is. It's awesome. Certainly the best Android camera out there. Kind of close to the iPhone. Leo Laborde, the tech guy. Awesome. Hey, 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 how are you today? Leo Laporte here, the tech guy. Time to talk computers, the internet, home theater, MP3 players, digital photography, all that jazz. 8888-ASK, Leo's the number. Normally we talk travel with Johnny Jett this hour. Johnny's on a plane. He'll be with us tomorrow on the next show. That's the problem with somebody who is a world traveler. Sometimes they're actually traveling. Who knew? Johnny is on a plane. But let's continue to take our calls here. We've got lots of people lined up. Diane is next. She is on the line from Oxnard, California. Hello, Diane. Leo Laporte, the the tech
Hi,
guy.
Hi, Leo. My question is, I've had a Yahoo email account for quite some time, and I'm wondering, is it possible to save or transfer those emails so I can retain them somehow?
Absolutely. There are lots of ways to do that. So right now what you do with your emails is you use the web to get them. You use a browser and you look at them on the website.
Yes, I use Mozilla, Firefox, and then sign on to my email account with Yahoo, and I can read them that way.
All right. So probably the simplest way to do this would be to get an email program for your computer. And email programs traditionally download the emails and store them on the computer. You can do it in such a way that they're not deleted at Yahoo. Now you got a backup, right? One at Yahoo and one on your personal computer. My recommendation for doing this would be something called Thunderbird, which is from the Firefox folks from Mozilla, because Thunderbird stores emails in a very standard format, the MBX format or mailbox format that's pure text. So even if, you know, and this happens all the time, the, you know, Thunderbird went away and nobody, you know, they stopped making it and no, there was no way to look at that email. You could still open up each individual email with a text, any text reader, and see it. So that's the kind of backup we want to do. So what I would suggest is go to Mozilla.org where you got Firefox and get Thunderbird. There are going to be some interesting questions you're going to have. You have to figure out what the settings are, what we call the POP. Or post office protocol mail settings for Yahoo. If you search on Google or Yahoo, you'll find the page where Yahoo describes those settings. You'll have to put those in the settings of Thunderbird. And there's one important setting you want to check, and you're going to have to find this. Don't forget to check this, which is leave mail on server. Unless you want to delete it from Yahoo. Because normally what Thunderbird does is it goes out, gets all the mail that's there, and then just deletes it. To save space on Yahoo's servers. And I think you want to keep it there, right?
Yes, I do. Now, I have the emails saved in different folders. One is like a work folder, one is like a personal folder. Is it possible with Thunderbird to pull down just all the work emails and not the personal, or do I have to pull
it? It will duplicate your folder structure, I think. That's an interesting question. By the way, you have to also, in Yahoo Mail, enable POP mail access. Is it a paid Yahoo account?
It is not.
Try it. I'll tell you what. I'm going to put links in the show notes to the two pages at Yahoo that tell you how to do this.
Okay.
And my sense is, as I remember, because I've had paid and unpaid Yahoo accounts, that you can, let's see, wait a minute. Only messages from your Yahoo Mail's inbox and spam folders can be delivered to an external mail client. So, to answer your question, you've done a lot of folder organization. Yeah, and this is Yahoo's limitation, not Thunderbird's limitation. It sounds like Yahoo's not allowing you to access those folders, which is too disappointing. Well, I'll give you the pages. We'll put them at techguylabs.com that describe how to set up POP mail. That's what you're going to do, post office protocol access to your Yahoo account. You may once have to pay for a premium account. It's not very expensive, Yahoo Mail Plus.
Yeah, that's okay.
It's a few bucks. It's $8 or something. Maybe it's 25. I don't remember. And then just discontinue it after you get all the mail. My larger concern now is about these other folders.
I don't care about anything other than my my inbox. Well, yeah, the inbox and the folders that are, you know, I don't care about spam or any of that other.
Well, obviously not. You know, no one wants to save their spam.
No.
But you'll get everything that's in your inbox. And by the way, you can continue to do this, continue to run Thunderbird as your email program even. The advantage of that, it gives you offline access to your Yahoo account even when you're not online. Yeah, Thunderbird always goes out and gets the mail. So you can really comes from an older time when people dialed in, right? So you would dial in, you would get the mail, download it to the computer, hang up, work on your mail, then dial in again and deliver it. Do you remember those days? Yeah. So now we're always on, so we don't need to do that. We can use a browser. But this is kind of using a technique that comes from those older days, the idea of downloading the mail to your storage. If you have folders that you really want to save, I guess you could...
My concern was that it would import them all and they wouldn't be segregated by folder
in one
anymore.
Big mush pile. I understand. And I think the problem is Yahoo, this is a little frustrating, doesn't seem to want to let you access your folders, just your inbox.
So I could transfer them all back to my inbox.
I guess, this is a real pain in the keister, but you could download your inbox, clear it out, or move it into another folder on the Yahoo page, move the other stuff into the inbox temporarily, do it by hand, but that's a real pain in the butt. Let's see if we can find a better way to do it. It seems to me, however, that the problem here is that Yahoo, and this is one of the reasons I'd get off Yahoo Mail if you can.
That's what I'm trying to do.
Ah, oh, I see. So you don't care if it's saved on Yahoo.
Well, I need to maintain the business emails.
Yeah.
And keep them. I have several years worth. I have to maintain them because I may need them as evidence.
Right. Yeah, of course. That's right. Boy, that's frustrating. And this is a limitation, an artificial limitation Yahoo puts on there, obviously, to keep you from getting off of Yahoo Mail. Oh, no, you can't download that stuff. It's my mail. I want it. Let me keep looking and see if there's some way, but it seems like no third-party program is going to be able to do this if Yahoo doesn't allow it. And Yahoo doesn't allow it. So, yes, get off Yahoo Mail. Yahoo Mail, they're bad people. I don't like them anymore. I'm mad at you, Yahoo.
Well, I've heard you say that before, which is one of the reasons I'm moving away from them.
Yeah, I think even from a business point of view, even Gmail would be preferable. Obviously, if you're in a business where you need to save emails, and nowadays I think almost everybody does, then it's prudent at least to do so. You probably need to set up a business email situation where you have a server that's storing it, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And using one of these free solutions like Yahoo or Gmail probably isn't ideal. Google has a paid solution that's designed for business. Yahoo's paid solution, though, is not. And somebody just told me it's $50, which is really annoying. It's a shame that Yahoo has not done a better job of maintaining what was, at one time, one of the best email systems out there. I used it. I loved it. But they just, like everything else at Yahoo, it's kind of gotten a little rusty.
Mm-hmm.
Yahoo's
and
like...
What if Yahoo goes away for some reason?
Well, I don't think they're going to go away. They have there's a lot of inertia in a company like Yahoo. They've been poorly run for years. Fortunately, they have a new CEO who's very good and is desperately trying to get the train back on the track. But meanwhile, there are a lot of boxcars in the back there that are just a mess. I will keep looking for a better solution, but until then, Thunderbird, I'll put the links on how to do this, and you'll just have to manually get those folders. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hey, you know, that note for call reminded me there are a lot of us who have phones that we're no longer using, perhaps phones we've thrown in a drawer to collect dust. You wouldn't do that with $100 bills, would you? That's kind of what you're doing if you're not going to Gazelle.com. Gazelle gives you top dollar for your old phone, your old electronics. Trade it in for cash. You have 30 days to get a quote, so you get the quote, and it's good for 30 days. That gives you time to decide even. In fact, you go get a quote now. Decide even when you want to pull the trigger. They'll pay shipping. They'll send you a PayPal credit. They'll send you a check or even an Amazon gift card. And now you might ask, what happens to all those old phones, Leo? Those old tablets, those old computers? Well, Gazelle is letting you buy certified pre-owned iPhones, Samsung Galaxy phones, and iPads direct. This is great because they're taking the cream of the crop on the trade-ins, just the best stuff. and making it available to you for a very affordable price. I think this is smart. I think in the past they would sell it on eBay, and you know, depending on the quality of the stuff. But now they're just taking the creme de la creme, and they're putting it on their special Gazelle certified pre-owned site. If you've lost or broken your phone, what a great way to buy a low-cost replacement. Visit Gazelle, G-A-Z-E-L-L-E.com. There are two conditions you can buy these in. Certified like new. That's the very, very best. Like somebody bought it and changed their mind. And certified good, there may be little signs of wear, probably similar to the device that you broke, or maybe even better. All devices have been put through a rigorous 30-point inspection to make sure they're fully functional. And, of course, they're backed by a 30-day risk-free return policy. One more reason to love Gazelle. They've paid out nearly $175 million to over a million customers. They've bought and sold more than 2 million phones and tablets. And what a great experience. Gazelle, G-A-Z-E-L-L-E.com. Free shipping, fast processing, no listing hassles. And yes, now buy certified pre-owned. High quality stuff from Gazelle. G-A-Z-E-L-L-E, gazelle.com. Leo Laporte, the tech guy, 8888 Ask Leo. That's the phone number, 888-827-5536. That's toll free from anywhere in the U.S. or Canada. Let's move on. More calls to come. Nick in Belmar, New Jersey. Hello, Nick.
Hey, Leo, how are you today?
I'm well. How are you?
I have to tell you, Heather is wonderful. She checked on me the whole time I was on hold. You have a great call screener there, and Heather.
Thank goodness, because we do keep you on hold for a good long time.
Yeah, I was on for almost an hour. But that's okay.
Thank you for your patience. I am a gasser, and I apologize. I just...
And you know what made me laugh is when you were talking about 8-tracks. Now, do you remember when in your car, for the 8-track tape player in your car, you could get an adapter? So you could play cassette tapes. Do you remember that?
I don't think I ever had an 8-track in my car. I don't know how. Well, first of all, when was the 8-track?
My first car was a 77 Pontiac Ventura, yeah. And it had an 8-track tape player in it.
I probably just couldn't afford a fancy 8-track in my car. I had a radio.
Right.
But I don't remember having an 8-track. In fact, I don't think I had a cassette until the late 90s.
Well, I think I just showed my age.
Let me just see. No, I'm on the same age. I could have easily had an 8-track. Let me see what when the 8-tracks were in the. They were silly because they started in 67. Here's one in a 1978 AMC Matador.
Well, mine was a 77. So there you go.
And I think the 8-track in there, I'm looking at this on Wikipedia, is the Blues Brothers Briefcase Full of Blues. So the idea was...
I had that.
This is your car, probably. That's your car right there. I like the faux wood.
In the back seat somewhere.
Yeah.
Somebody still has that car.
So the idea of the 8-track was a kind of a cartridge that you had four different tracks, right? You could...
Yep.
And you'd press a button and you'd play track 1 through 4. And there were a couple of songs on each. And it was called 8-tracks because each track was stereo left and right. So that's 4 times 2. Yeah. And they had a big chunk because I think the head would actually move when you went to a different track.
Yep. It sure did.
Wow.
And when you went over a bump, it was interesting.
Oh, was it?
Oh, yeah. You did that ka-chunk. Anyway, my question is, Netgear has come out with a bunch of routers that say that you turn any printer into an AirPrint printer. Do you know anything about that?
Yeah. Yeah, this isn't actually, believe it or not, it's not uncommon. I think HP pioneered this in the maybe 10 years ago with, what did they call them, Jet Direct, something like that. The idea was you've got a regular printer. In those days, it was a parallel port, and you would plug this thing into the parallel port that would give it network access. And in those days, it wasn't Wi-Fi. You plug an Ethernet port into that. The idea is to take a printer that doesn't have Internet access and give it Internet access. And, of course, nowadays, because we have these devices that don't have printer ports at all, Internet access has to mean, in many cases, wireless. Apple has solved it for its iPad and iPhone devices, its iOS devices.
That's what it is I have an iPad.
Right.
And I have you're going to laugh at this. Do you remember the old HP 4 laser printer.
And that's what they made the Jet Directs for.
Still works.
Yeah, the great. That was okay. That is like the. That's the 8-track of printers. That was a classic.
Well, my mother still has it.
Does it have wood grain on the side?
Well, let's put it this way: it takes a cartridge, so you can print Windows.
Oh, nice.
The thing still works.
Yeah.
And I just wonder, because it says it'll take any printer, any quote unquote.
Well, you should check. We have a sponsor that does the same thing. In fact,
I just wonder if that XPrint server.
XPrint server, same idea. What these are is they take USB or, I mean, I think in the case of XPrint server, it's mostly USB printers.
Right.
They'll take a USB printer, and yours is not. It's parallel port, right?
It has a parallel port with the converter to USB.
Wow.
Don't laugh too hard.
Wow. Well, see, that might be an issue. I don't know. I mean, you'll have to look on the website and see if it supports that particular printer. And you might go to the HP website, because they definitely had Jet Direct stuff that plugged right into that printer. Basically, what you're doing is you're adding internet access to the printer. And with mobile devices nowadays, you have to, because there's no way to plug it into the printer.
Well, that's an old printer, and you cannot kill it.
No, those are great laser printers. What's the cost of running it? Can you still get cartridges and all that?
Oh, you certainly can.
Probably every business in America has a laser jet in the corner somewhere.
Right. Well,
cranking out, you know.
She's had it for years, and we buy the cartridges, believe it or not, through one of the big box stores.
Yeah. No, that's a great printer, and there's no reason. Those laser printers, because when you replace the cartridge, the toner, you're also replacing the print head. There's nothing there. As long as the physical machinery doesn't die, there's nothing ever going to go wrong with that. It'll just go,
It's so easy to work on, because I have a little bit of an IT background myself. Work for the state of New Jersey.
Awesome.
I'm one of those lazy state employees.
Are you the guy who closed the bridge? No, I'm just kidding.
No. No.
You don't work on the bridge, do you?
No. Motor Vehicle Commission. Anyway, doing IT work.
I'm going to be nice to you, though. That's just in case. I don't know.
Well, if you know anybody in New Jersey. But anyway.
Grew up. My family's from New Jersey. I spent a lot of time in Jersey. I know Jersey. Hey, yeah, that's a great printer. I can't promise that these adapters will work, because it's such an old printer. They're really designed for more modern USB printers.
But as I was going to say, the only thing I've ever had to change on there is the fuser. That's it.
Right.
And that's it. And
that does not get replaced. That's right. Yeah.
Yeah, and that was so easy to replace.
You know, this is what put HP on the map. HP was a nice little scientific instrument company.
Yep.
They made computers. In fact, very famously, Steve Wozniak was working at HP when he invented and built the first Apple I using parts, free parts, that HP gave its engineers. He went to HP and said, hey, look what I made, a personal computer. They said, nobody's going to want one of those.
Right.
They had the right of first refusal, because he made it from HP parts. And they said, we don't want it. Steve was able to sell it, create Apple Computer. HP's big success, though, was the printer division out there in Colorado. And inkjet printers and laser printers put them on the map.
Right.
Put them on the map. Yeah, and
the old thing is better than any of the new stuff we're making today.
What they're saying to me in the chat room is the old joke is, those old laser printers just won't die. That's the only problem with them.
They don't die.
They won't stop working. Hey, very nice to talk to you, Nick. Yeah, these are good ideas. You got to make sure, and it'll say on the Netgear site, it'll say on the XPrint server site which printers it supports. It's nice, because they add either Apple's AirPrint capability, so you can print to them with an iOS device, or Google Print. Google has a similar cloud printing facility that is actually kind of cool, because you can print from any computer anywhere to your home printer. I can print right now to my printer at home, because it's one of those new Epson printers that has the Google Print built in, and AirPrint. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Da-da-da-da-da-da. This is your friendly announcer. 8888-ASK Leo. That's the phone number. William in Dallas, Texas is next. Hi, William.
Hi, Leo.
Welcome.
How are you?
I'm well.
Well, I'm having a bit of a hardware issue, and it's funny because earlier you talked about mobile security versus desktop security, and I have a Windows 8.1 computer that I built with my dad.
Fun. Yeah. That's a great father-son thing to do.
It was, and it cost $400.
Even better. I like it. Now, where'd you get the specs? How'd you figure out what to do?
My dad has built all. My dad and my brothers have built all the computers.
Oh, neat. So they kind of knew where to, what to do. And did you sit down with him and say, well, can I get this? And what parts do I want? And like that?
We were really limited on price
and
compatibility
of
my current RAM, which we ended up just throwing out the door.
Yeah, sometimes it's a false economy to say, I'm going to save a piece or two from the old one.
Yeah. And then 2 years ago, and this is the reason why we upgraded, or one of the reasons why we bought a computer. About 2 years ago, my hard drive died.
Oh, nuts.
And it was a brand new hard drive.
Yeah.
Legitimately less than a year old.
Yeah.
And so I got a Seagate 500 gigabyte hard drive off of Newegg for $50.
Wow.
Yeah.
Can you believe the prices now? I think even SSDs, solid-state drives, which were very expensive per gigabyte, have now fallen fairly significantly below a buck a gigabyte, which is good news. I think they're 34, 35 cents a gigabyte now.
And I do want to apologize for the poor quality. I'm on a cheap Go phone. But
sounds fine. Today, anyway, what can I do for you?
So today I was browsing the web, playing a bit of Minecraft, had Skype open, and I'm a complete tech geek.
Sounds like a perfect Saturday afternoon to me.
Yeah, almost. I was downloading Windows Server Technical Preview, the ISO, which takes 3 hours.
Oh dear. Yeah.
And dear. Yeah, so I was like, I'm going to go do.
Is that just for fun, or are you planning to install that? What are you going to do with that?
Oh yeah, no, I'm actually upgrading from Windows Server 2008 on my virtual machine.
Does Dad have a TechNet subscription or something?
No, but Dad does have a beautiful, beautiful server with like 48 gigs of RAM. And so,
oh yeah, Dad's got all the power, huh?
Yeah, I mean,
yeah. Oh, no budget for Dad. No, there never is. By the way, I just want to point out. My daughter called me up. She said, I need a new car, Dad. I said, okay. She said, I want an Audi. I said, nah. But, Dad, you have an Audi. I'm Dad. I'm Dad. That's different. Dad makes the money. Dad spends the money.
Dad has a bit of a budget.
So what can I, anyway, what can, let's, because I we have other callers. What can I do to help you here?
I was downloading it, went to do chores, came back, and Skype was unresponsive. Chrome was unresponsive.
The download was still ongoing?
Yeah.
Huh.
I mean, I couldn't see because I couldn't do Control-Alt-Delete. I couldn't do anything.
Oh, well.
I could move my mouse.
But you could move your mouse.
I could move my mouse.
You could move your mouse, and you were seeing the download numbers continue to go up.
No, I didn't see that.
Did you see, is the clock progressing? Is anything on screen progressing at all?
I actually didn't think to look at the screen.
Okay. So you don't know. All right.
Yeah, here's what I did do. Control Alt Delete works good 99% of the time. Did not work. Control Shift Escape, so bring up Task Manager, did not work. Alt Tab did not work. Windows Key did not work.
Yeah. Yeah. Something crashed.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's my technical diagnosis. The thing locked up.
Right, and I hit the reset button on my computer.
Uh-oh.
Because...
Well, what else are you going to do, right? You can't Control-Alt-Delete. You can't bring up the task manager. The mouse is moving. That's kind of weird. That means it's not completely dead. But the programs, we don't think everything... Something's locked up. What else you can do but hit reset? But you got to be very careful, because if it's in the middle... Did the disk get screwed up?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Because if it's in the middle of a disk write during... So this is really tricksy. Because you're stuck, right? What am I going to do? I can't, the computer's not responsive. Best thing to do is go to bed, wait, let it go. I know you wanted to play a little more Minecraft. in the middle of building that nice house there on the plain. Nighttime's coming. The creeps are coming. You got, I understand, time's a-wasting. But patience is a virtue in this respect. What you, the worst thing you can do is hit reset or unplug the machine when, during a write. And you were in the middle of downloading something, right? So the computer is still doing that much. It's not completely dead, is it? But still downloading stuff. So it's still writing to the disk. And right as it's writing something to the disk, you hit reset. It's going, and in the middle of the, which is the where you hit the reset button, it spewed data across your disk. Oh, no. Oh, nuts. So what we don't know is how much damage has been done to the disk. It's not physical damage. That's the good news. So, you know, if in absolute worst possible case, you have a lovely backup. I know because you're well-trained by your papa to back up your data. So you're not, you know, you've got your saved games and everything. Absolute worst case, you just reinstall Windows, format the drive, and move on. Do a deep, low-level format because, you know, you just want to make sure you get everything on that drive erased and start it over. If there's stuff on the drive you want to recover, you want to do this without kind of having to do the low-level format. In many cases, a drive that's been, you know, it depends where the happened. It could have happened right at the beginning there in the file allocation table. Could have happened over a master boot record. There are places in the drive that spewing data would be disastrous to the future operation as is. You'd have to reformat it to get it to work again. And there are places where you just, you know, you might have spewed somewhere in a swap file or somewhere where it doesn't matter. So it's just, it's kind of the luck of the draw, and you don't control that. When you hit the reset button, it's writing wherever that head is. That's where you're going to get, you know, the spewed of data. So I would say, you know, if you get your dad to take your hard drive out of your computer, get your dad to look at it, you probably can see most of the data, copy it over if you wish. But the best thing to do at this point, is just reformat the drive. Do a low-level format and repartition and format. Reinstall Windows and you'll be good to go. There's certainly no physical damage unless you dropped the computer when you pressed the reset button. Nothing to worry about. Hey, that's part of the joy and pleasure, William, of building and running your own computer. Aren't you lucky? Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Yeah, it's not a spin right problem. It is, you corrupted the file system or you corrupted the, you know, mostly it's most likely you corrupted the file system. Do you like to cook? I like to cook. I like to cook a lot. And I feel like, especially after my most recent adventure eating out, that I want to eat at home more often. But the problem is, if you're like me, you got a long work day. And the one thing you wish you had could do was go shopping so you can make a nice meal for yourself. You would like this, actually, Heather. Blue Apron does the shopping for you and the meal planning so that you are going to get home, have everything, I mean everything you need to make a fantastic meal. Your loved ones, your honey, will think, wow, you're quite the chef. And you can just say, well, yes, I am. You don't have to thank Blue Apron. But I got to tell you, you're going to love Blue Apron. We've been using it for almost a month now, and I just love this idea. It's if you're busy, you're health conscious, you don't have time to shop, even if you've never cooked before, this is a great solution for you. Don't order out. Don't go eat out. That gets expensive and unhealthy very quickly. For as little as $9.99 per person per meal, Blue Apron will send you a refrigerated box. There's the box. And in it will be the perfect amount of amount of high quality ingredients and the recipe. You get these great recipe cards. They're coated stock. You're going to save the recipe card because you'll be making stuff that you've never made before that is so delicious. You will be a gourmet. All the ingredients come from local farms. You're getting produce that's in season and fresh. Meals are 500 to 700 calories a serving. You wouldn't guess it. In fact, they can be quite filling, but they are healthy and good for you. And they will work around your schedule for delivery and your dietary preferences, too. Cooking takes about half an hour. Shipping is free. And the menus are always new, so you'll never get the same meal twice. Meals like beef on Weck with heirloom potato salad, or barbecue roasted tofu and sorghum glazed carrots with creamy collard greens and millet pilaf. I'm telling you, there is amazing stuff. Let's see what's on the menu this week at blueapron.com/twit. Basted flank steaks, chicken and chestnut pasta. This stuff tastes as good as it looks. And I have to say, I've saved many of these. In fact, I think I've saved them all. Saved the recipes. I'm going to cook them again. BlueApron.com/twit. We've got two meals waiting for you for free. Who's that? When's the last time somebody said, here's two meals free? BlueApron.com/twit. And by the way, this would be a great holiday gift if you've got, as I do, college-age kids. Get them set up. Started cooking. It's so important that you know how to cook. It is one of the most important life skills you can have. Your life will be better. You'll be healthier. And you know what? It's a great way to meet the love of your life. You cook him or her an incredible meal, and you set up the candles, and you don't tell them the Blue Apron, and they'll go, what? What? You're a catch. I love you. I love you. BlueApron.com/twit. Your first date awaits. It really is great. A better way to cook. Who has time to shop? Just go to BlueApron.com/twit. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. 8888. Ask Leo. All right. I gotta hustle. I gotta get through the calls here. Get through the calls. David's on the line. Nova Scotia.
Yes.
Yes. I think that Heather was doing the Latin translation for me.
I think that would be New Scotland.
New Scotland. That's right. New Scotland. Yeah. Hey. Welcome. What can I do for you, David?
Well, thank you. My wife and I we're looking at the differences, especially with the so-called waterproofing between the Z3 for the Sony and the S5 for Samsung, which now we did a little bit of research and Sony seems to have the better system, but do you know anything about them?
Yeah, I've not used the Z3. I use the Z2. Sony's cameras are very, very good, although the S5 is very good.
I don't really care about the cameras. It's the waterproof that I really...
Yeah, care. And the S5 is waterproof, which is weird. Is this why? Do you want to go swimming?
Well, no, but it's just that I listen to audiobooks because I'm visually impaired, so I use the phone a lot, and I ruined, you know, a couple of phones that way. I've had the...
What, do you take them in the bath?
And I didn't... Pardon?
You take them in the bathtub?
No, but, you know, you sleep, you sweat, right?
Yeah, you drip. Well, I had a bad experience once. There was a company that claimed to be able to waterproof an iPhone, and
I watched you.
they said, okay, send us your iPhone, and we'll waterproof it. And then I dipped it in a glass of water, and it went, and it never worked again.
Yeah, exactly.
So I no longer waterproof test phones. However, my colleagues here at the fine Twit facility have indeed waterproof tested the S5, I believe, and it works fine. None of these phones would you want to go deep sea diving with.
No, I understand that, but the doors with the Sony came off almost, and I didn't realize it. On the Z1, I'm sorry. And I didn't realize it, and it was almost too late. Nothing untoward happened, but, you know. It's just the waterproof doors. So either you're saying I'm taking a chance with either one. Is that the deal?
Nothing's perfect, but I wouldn't choose the phone exclusively for waterproofing. I'll tell you what, Scooter X has put in our chat room a video of waterproof testing of exactly those two phones, the Z3 versus the S5, on YouTube. And they've put these phones in little plastic tubs of water. They do look at the ceiling, the sealants, and that's what makes these phones waterproof is really, as much as anything, covering up the ports in a way that seals them. And the truth is, that means it's on you a little bit, because if you forget to close the USB port, water can get in there. I would say both these phones, look, what is the rate? Are the ratings, they have these waterproof ratings. Are the ratings the same? I haven't looked.
I think the Sony's were a little bit better, yeah. I think.
You know, they give them, I can't remember, you know, IP4 or IP5. I'm looking at this video. I mean, these phones are in tubs of water. And, well, they're no longer responsive. That's not a good sign. Let's see, after they dry out for a little bit. You're not going to do that, though. You're not putting them in a tub of water, are you?
That's not my intention. No.
Yeah.
I'm not going to take them swimming or nothing.
Yeah. I would say any of these.
It's just a cheap base with hers.
Right.
So, you know.
Ah, lady, don't take the phone in the shower. Let me see. The waterproof ratings, there's a standard for, okay?
Yeah.
And so you need to see what the waterproof rating is for each phone. And that will tell you a little bit, the IP number will tell you a little bit about what it can do. I'd have to look this up to see what the Z3 versus the S5 IP number is.
All right.
And then if you look up the IP number, it'll tell you exactly what it is. Like how, if it's IP58, it can be immersed in 1.5 meters of fresh water for up to 30 minutes. That's the definition. So you can actually look and see. And there's fairly rigorous testing they have to pass. But that means all the seals are intact. All the portholes are closed. And the truth is, in real life, especially if what you're worried about is accidental dunking, that may not always be the case.
Yeah.
So I don't trust the full waterproofness of these phones. I think what it really will say is, are you in the rain and you want to take a picture? Don't worry about it.
Yeah.
So the Z3 is IP65. That's pretty good.
Yeah. Okay.
People like the Z3 a lot. It's a great camera. I am not a fan of Sony or Samsung's, as you've heard me say, modifications to Android. For some reason,
no,
I didn't like the S5 at all, and I felt like the Z2 wasn't. I feel bad because everybody loves these Xperias, these Sony phones, and they've never really moved me. So. I would say of the two, I would get the Z3.
Okay. And I got one more about virtualization for virtual machines under Windows, Windows 8 specifically. Can you recommend a virtual machine?
I think the king of the hill is, of course, Windows has its own Hyper-V, but the king of the hill in third-party virtualization.
Yeah, but I need Windows Pro for that. I only have.
Yeah. No, I'd say VMware. That's the king. VMware offers appliances that you can run for free. You can then install various operating systems. It's my first choice. And if you have Windows Pro, if you have Hyper-V, I guess because it's Microsoft, that might be a better choice. But VMware is a king of the hill. Love VMware, and I've used it a lot. There are free, if your needs are few, and your dollars are even fewer. There's VirtualBox, the free choice, but it doesn't have anywhere near the features. I VMware. VMware. Nothing more to say. VMware. Hey, thanks for the call. Get the X3 and then call me and tell me how you like it. I feel so guilty. I feel like, Leo, you got to get an X3. But I already have so many phones. I don't want any more phones. Please don't make me buy another phone. You got to try the X3. You cannot be the tech guy and not have tried the X3. I don't want to buy another phone. Please. Don't make me. Tom, Riverside, California, is getting a message from the beyond. Hi, Tom.
Hi. Yeah, the message is Windows detected a hard drive problem. You need to back up your hardware.
Wow.
I just thought what a great way to
isn't that nice?
Download everything to somebody else.
Well, no. I would back it up. They didn't say where to back it up to, did they?
No, they have a button on here that says, click this button to begin process.
Yeah, I'd hold off that. You don't have to use their system. Let's talk about this when we come back. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. I don't know if that's a smart error, a Windows error, or a malware error. I just invented a new phrase, a new word, a malware error. I'll ask him. Stick around because Tom will. Actually, we could do it right now. Why not? I got nothing else to do for the next 6 minutes. So, Tom, it doesn't say, is it a smart, S-M-A-R-T error, or it sounds like it's a Windows error?
It says in the blue banner at the top, it says Microsoft Windows.
Okay.
There's a big red X, and then it says Windows has detected a hard disk problem. Back up your files immediately to prevent information loss, and then contact your computer manufacturer. Determine if you really need a repair or replace the disk.
That sounds to me like legitimate, but I'm worried that I understand your fear. What happens when you press that button?
Well, it goes to another window. I don't have that error up right now. And that's the other thing. It comes up like about every 15 minutes.
Yeah, I think it is a smart. So there is in most modern hard drives something called SMART, S-M-A-R-T, which is designed to, but because of the recalcitrance of the hard drive manufacturing industry, never really did warn you about errors. The hard drive industry didn't really want people to see these errors, so they made it. They kind of took the guts out of it.
Well, one of the other things that throws me is that when I go to disk management on Windows 7, it tells me that particular drive is healthy.
Oh, that's interesting. So, when it suggests you back it up, does it say use Windows Backup, or does it offer a commercial alternative? Do you remember?
I don't really. I have a. I can't click on the button to go here.
Yeah. Don't worry about it. I mean, this sounds normal.
Okay.
So this smart thing is dumb in two ways. One, studies show about a third of hard drives fail without any smart error ever. They just die. And most of the time, right, when people call me, they never saw a smart error. And then two, right, that's false. False positives or false negatives. And then the other problem is SMART often warns you when there's no problem at all. So that's false positives. So how useful is SMART? I don't know. However, if you're seeing this on a regular basis, it certainly would be prudent to back it up. Is there a way to turn that off in the
data?
Look in your security center. I've never seen this error, but look in your security center and see if you can disable this message.
Okay.
I bet you can. If it's a real Microsoft error, then you should be able to say, I don't want to see that anymore. You should listen to its warning and make a backup.
Yes.
But just do like HAL 9000 said in 2001, I suggest we put the drive back in and let it fail. And once you've made sure that you're prudently backing it up, keep using it till it dies, because it's very possible that error message is spurious.
Okay. It was suggested to me to use Ghost and make a clone of my drive.
That's fine.
And put it on another drive. The Ghost that I have is 14.0, and it is too old to do Win 7.
Yeah.
Do you have any recommendations?
There's some free stuff if you're pretty sophisticated. There's CloneZilla, which is free but requires making a boot disk. I wouldn't use Ghost anymore. That's long gone. There are commercial programs like Acronis True Image that are good. There's two programs I use that are inexpensive. The first, both of them recommended by Steve Gibson, our hard drive guru. He suggests Drive Snapshot at drivesnapshot.de. The nice one about that is you can do it while Windows is running.
Okay.
So that's a lot easier than CloneZilla. And then now he uses something he likes better. I don't know if it's better or not called. I think it's Drive Imager. Let me see. It has such a generic name that I can never find it. But let me see if I can find it. Drive Image from runtime.org.
Okay.
But they all do the same thing, which is make a ghost, a exact clone of the hard drive. And that's a good solution.
Okay.
You know, at that point, if you really wanted to be, you know, assiduous about it, you could then run something like SpinWrite. Check disk isn't enough. Run SpinWrite, which is $80, so it's like, well, who's going to do that? But if you had a program that would really thoroughly deep check the drive, SpinWrite would detect any real error, and then maybe correct whatever the problem was. How old is the drive?
I've had this computer for about 2.5 years, and it's a 2 terabyte drive, and I've got about 600 gigs of video on there.
Yeah, I would just back it up. You know what? I think this is not a malware. This is a legit error from Windows. It's probably based on SMART. The only question is, how smart is smart. And it's unknown. But if it's important data to you, the good news is a 2 terabyte drive is what, $110?
Yeah.
I would just get a new drive.
Yeah, I put a new single terabyte drive in there, and that's big enough to handle what I've got.
There you
so
go.
Far.
There you go.
And then I'll have all the time in the world to diagnose the other drive.
Yeah, yeah. And so I think that the warning is good in the sense that, you know, all hard drives, like all of us, are on our way to death's door. It's just a question of how soon.
I know. I'm at that end of it.
some of us are closer than others. And we don't know. That's the problem. If you knew, but you just don't know when that drive's going to go, you know, kick the bucket. So better to back it up.
Okay.
Thanks for the call.
Thank you very much.
My pleasure. Take care. Yeah, I think we can safely say that was real. It wasn't a malwarer. I like that. I've invented a new phrase, the malwarer. Well, hey, how are you today? Leo Laporte here, the tech guy. Time to talk computers, the internet, cell phones, home theater, camcorders, all that jazz. 888-ASK-LEO, that's the number. 888-827-5536. I've got to give you the website. I have been remiss because I've talked about it all through the show but not told you where it is. What? TechGuyLabs.com. TechGuyLabs.com. And we put, it's free. There's no sign up. There's no fee or anything. We put everything I say on the show there. We also put after the fact audio and video of the shows there. You could search by day, by hour, by call. You can even add your own comments. And I appreciate everybody who's been doing that. That's wonderful because then the search gives you my answer, but also other people's thoughts. And it's really, I think, very useful. So when I say, I'm going to put a link on the show page or whatever, that's where we're talking about. TechGuyLabs.com. And that's all week long, I think, a useful resource for you. That's the plan anyway. And since this is show 1,141, I think we have been loading it up with goodies for long enough that it probably has something of value to you. You'll also find a link there to our chat room, which is a lot of fun, very useful. You could say hello to EK Party Man, Red Penguin, Toad Sloth, and Mars Worm. People like that. Yes, you have to make up a dopey name if you're going to be in our chat room, apparently. I use Leo. I don't know. Is something wrong with me? Harlequin. Logan 5 is the most normal name, and that's sure not his name, but a reference to Blade, to some movie. What is the movie? Logan's Run, I would guess. What is it about? You know, and the funny thing is you create a chat name, and then you're stuck with it, right? You have to use it forever. You can't ever, you know, that's your name. That's who you are in the world of chat. Anyway, link to the chat room at techguylabs.com. You'll also find, and I don't mention this often, and I probably should say it more often, you'll find links there to our podcast network. So you may think, oh, that lucky guy, Leo, he just works on weekends, goes home, enjoys the rest of the week, takes time off, sunbathes, plays the ponies, you know, just takes it easy. Yeah. But no. I should be. If I had any brains at all, I would be. But foolishly, I thought, well, if I'm only working weekends, why don't I start an entire separate line of businesses, a shows, where I just put them on the internet and let people download them for free? And that's the podcast network. And I do, besides this show, 9 others that people who are interested in geeky stuff will enjoy. Windows Weekly, Security Now, Mac Break Weekly for the Macintosh fans. iPad Today, if you like iPads. And then we have other hosts, too. There's like 30 shows there. Live broadcast 24-7, including this show. It's all at twit.tv. Or just if you go to techguylabs.com, you'll find the link. Yeah, it's called Twit. What about it? You don't like that name? I know what Twit... You don't have to send me an email saying, you know, the Twit is an insult in Britain. I know it is. It was a joke. It stands for This Week in Tech. You don't have to send it. And then there's also the wag on Twitter who will always say, oh, you know, a twit is a pregnant goldfish. Thank you. I did know that. I've known that. Now I know that. 8888-ASK-LEO. Back to the phones. I should mention the call we ended last hour with. After we got off the radio, I continued to talk to our caller. We did come to the conclusion that was a legitimate Windows message saying your hard drive's about to die. I haven't seen it very often. It's not something to worry about. It is certainly something to take seriously, to make a backup of your data. Anytime you get a warning, your hard drive's about to die, back up your data. Do. It's just a good, backing up your data is a good thing to do all the time. You should always have a backup. Typically those messages come from this smart system that doesn't really work all that well. So half the time the messages are bogus. Your drive is not about to die. Half the time it doesn't say anything at all and your drive does die. You can't rely on it either way. But anytime something says backup, do. And then look in the security center on Windows 7. You should be able to disable. I think you should be able to disable that warning because, that's kind of pretty annoying. Even if you do back it up every 15 minutes, you get told back up. That's annoying. So back it up. Do heed it. Would be prudent, wouldn't be prudent to ignore it. And then just disable it and continue to use the drive, making sure you continue to back up. And this is why, in fact, let's do the Carbonite. Let's mention Carbonite. This would be a good place to mention Carbonite. And then we'll get back to the phones. We'll talk next to Eric in Cathedral City. He wants to print from his iPad. I can help you do that. Carbonite Online Backup, one of our fine sponsors, is really the solution to all of this because Carbonite is backup that is always on, is always backing up. It's continuous. It's backup. Frankly, you can forget. Not many products in the world of computing that, you'd say, oh, the best thing about this is I can forget I'm using it. This is one of them. Install Carbonite and your worries are over. You've always got a good backup. To the cloud, to the internet. Now, you probably know that I trust and use the cloud, but maybe you're wondering, what is the cloud? How secure is it? In Carbonite's case, extremely. The cloud is, of course, the internet. You're backing up to the internet. And the advantage of that is you're getting the data off-site, so off-premises. So if there's a fire or somebody steals your stuff, you still have a backup somewhere else. Is it private? Yes. Carbonite uses strong encryption to get it up there, SSL, and encrypts it on their own servers so your files are safe and privacy protected. You can try it for free at Carbonite.com, and you'll get 2 free bonus months when you use my name, Leo. I put my important data in Carbonite. I put my trust there and my kids, my family's stuff. It's all backed up on Carbonite. And my business stuff, too. Carbonite's data centers are safe, secure. They're temperature controlled. They're guarded 24/7. They have uninterrupted power. That's better than your home computer. And the backups are backed up. I love that. I trust Carbonite. So should you. Visit Carbonite.com. Get 2 free bonus months when you use my name, Leo. Carbonite. You got to back it up to get it back. So do it right with Carbonite. Eric, Cathedral City, Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Hi, Eric.
Hey, Leo. How you doing?
I'm well.
I'm a huge fan.
Thank you.
I've listened to you since day one on KFI.
It's 10 years, my friend.
Yep.
More than 10 years. Wow. Thank you. I appreciate it.
No problem. So anyway, here's my situation. So I have a Windows computer network. I got two computers. One is Windows Vista. The other one is Windows 8.1. I have 2 printers. One is a Wi-Fi printer. It's a Kodak 9000 series. And the other printer is a laser printer that's shared on the network. It's an HP 4000, really
okay.
Old.
Mm-hmm.
I want to print from my mom's iPad when she wants to get like a recipe or something like that.
Yeah.
And AirPrint doesn't seem to want to work with those. So what should I do?
Okay, so there's 2 ways to print from an iPad. One is Apple's technology AirPrint. In order for that to work, the printer itself has to have AirPrint in it. They have to have licensed it and blah, blah, blah.
Right.
I presume that those don't. The other way to go is a lot of printer companies make their own software for the iPad. It doesn't work as well. This predates the AirPrint technology because the iPad, you couldn't print from an iPad when it first came out at all. So companies like Epson and Canon, probably Kodak, I don't know, you'll have to look, made software that you would install on your iPad. It was kind of kludgy. You'd have to send the file to print to the software. Then the software, would, you know, wasn't ideal. AirPrint has superseded it and works much better. But if you don't have AirPrint on your printer, at least start by going to the App Store and seeing if you can find an app for that particular printer. If you can't, I'll tell you another way to do this when we come back. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. We were talking about printing from an iPad. So I mentioned that the original iPad had no printing capability because Apple really thought of the iPad as the anti-computer, the non-computer. The computer for people who didn't want to know they or think about using a computer or know they were using one. It was an appliance. And in the original versions, I suspect this was designed in, they did not print. What do you want to print for? You don't need to print. Printing's old school. But people still want to print. A recipe is a good example. You don't want to bring your iPad in the kitchen and get all the sauce all over it. So you print out a piece of paper so you can, you know, have it in front of you. That's a good example. So people still like to print. So Apple recognized this. First, the printer companies recognized it. And there are even third-party printer apps that will let you print from the iPad using Wi-Fi. But that generally requires hardware support on the printer side. If you think about it, of course, the printer A has to be on the Wi-Fi network and B has to kind of recognize the data coming at. Oh, that's something to print from an iPad. Okay, I'll print that. Apple eventually, I don't know how long it took several years, finally realized, oh, we should have printing. So they added AirPrint, and that's something that a printer company can license and put in their printer. But you can also, third parties have licensed AirPrint and have made little dongles. And we were talking about this in the first hour. XPrintServer.com, who is an advertiser, I should mention, Netgear, HP, and others, make little USB thingies you plug your printer into that put your non-AirPrint, non-Wi-Fi printer online and, you know, make them internet printers and support the AirPrint technology. So now you're still not printing really technically to the printer. You're printing to the little doohickey, the XPrint server, but then it sends it to the printer in a way the printer understands. So these devices are $150 thereabouts. You add it, plug it into the printer, and now you can print to it. So if you can't get a printer app for your iPad that works with your particular printer, or if you decide it's kind of kludgy, which it is. Kludgy is a word we use in the tech business. Does it mean, is that meaningful to normal people? But if I say kludgy, do you know what I'm talking about, Heather? You do. You get the idea.
It's kind of onomatopoeia.
Yeah. Yeah, it's kludgy. It's ugly. It's a kludge. I don't know what the origin of that word is, but it is inelegant. How about that? It's ugly. If you want to do it in a more elegant way, then just supporting AirPrint, which is supported globally now on the iPad, and you have to have an up-to-date the iPad, of course, then you could print from anything using AirPrint, anything that prints using AirPrint, and it just add that little dongle to your printer. It turns almost any printer into an AirPrint printer. XPrintServer.com. Rosalind, I love that name, in Temecula.
Hello, Leo. Good afternoon.
Hello, Rosalind. What can I do for you?
Leo, I've decided it's time for me to join the technology age.
Ah.
I've been fighting it all for years, and my family keeps saying to me, come on, you've got to get modern. So now we have a computer in the house. My husband uses it, and all our information is on there. And I would like to get myself something. All I want to do is to be able to, on Skype, speak to my family and friends overseas, especially with a camera, and then to get email and just do general things, look up things. Then that's basically all I need it for. And my son came with me, and we went to look at, is it tablets, I think?
Yes, tablets.
And I'm sort of, you know, that's where I'm stuck now. We looked at different ones, and then, of course, we saw the iPad, and then we saw the Sony. And I'm not sure. He says the iPad is much easier to use, apparently, much more user-friendly. So now I'm stuck. I don't know which to get, and I thought I'd ask you for your input.
Fair Rosaline. You know, in sixth grade, I played Orlando Dubois in Shakespeare's As You Like It. And, of course, Rosalind comes from that play. Yes.
There you go. Yeah.
I shall always think of Fair Rosaline. I think your son is right on, Daddy-O. He's pointing you in the right direction. People buy computers because that's what everybody uses. That's what you use at work. It's what everybody around you is using. But a computer brings with it a passel of worries because it's very complex. It's, as you might imagine, it's an extremely complex machine. If you listen to the show for 5 minutes, that's obvious. People have all sorts of problems with it. It's like saying, I'm going to buy a Jaguar because I need to take a walk down the block. And it's just, it's a constant source of woe. And it's more than you need. All you want to do is get on the internet, really.
Right, right.
I mean, email, that's on the internet. Browsing, that's on the internet. Little shopping, that's on the internet. And the touch interface is so natural, and all tablets have touch interfaces, that people just go, wow, I get it. Two-year-olds can use iPads. They go, oh, yeah. So it's just natural. Now, geeks like me will say, well, but you can't, whatever, do X with an iPad because it's just so limited. It is limited. In order to get rid of all of that complexity, you have to very much narrow your focus. But it's narrowed to, I think, the sweet spot of what 90% of people want to do. You're not planning on making a major motion picture or writing a great American novel, are you?
At this stage, I doubt it.
You might be an artist, however. An iPad's great for art, sketching, and so forth because the touch interface is so naturalistic. There are lots of things. It's not that you can't create with an iPad. You can. It just doesn't have a real keyboard, so you wouldn't want to spend hours at it typing. It has a keyboard, but it's on screen. It's like typing on glass.
But I saw the one. I saw this. Is it the Sony one? You can. It comes with a key. You can put a keyboard onto it as well. I mean, and then it can attach, and you can fold it up.
Again, as you start to add these things, you're going to add complexity. You're going to add frustration because it's something you have to learn. You can use a keyboard with an iPad. Any Bluetooth, which is a radio technology that lets the keyboard talk to the iPad, any Bluetooth keyboard will work. Apple sells one. You can even get Logitech sells a little stand. It looks just like the Sony. The iPad sets in the stand, and you can type on the keyboard. So you can buy a physical keyboard that works with an iPad. The nice thing about the iPad is most of the time you won't want to use it.
I see. So you suggest the iPad as opposed to the Android system of
strongly.
Sony? Strongly. Really?
Because of the variety of applications available for it. The App Store on the iPad and the iPhone is mature. It's the original App Store. And the apps are generally very elegant. Now, I'll tell you the negative on the iPad. There's no consistent user interface. It's touch, but nobody's agreed. We're starting to get there, but nobody's really agreed on what swipe left means versus swipe right versus tapping versus holding. And so each program is a little bit of an adventure, but not bad. You're going to love the iPad, Rosalind.
It's worth the money.
Absolutely. It's the creme de la creme. Do not get the Sony. Get the iPad.
Leo, thank you so much for your help. I do appreciate it. I don't feel as lost as I did before.
Bless you, Rosalind. Thank you. Take care. Tech Guy Show brought to you by a company that saved my booty about 10 years ago. FreshBooks.com. You know about FreshBooks? I did not know about it when I was traveling to Canada every month to do the TV show up there. And the way that it worked is that I would invoice him at the end of the month, except I never did. I mean, I did, but I would wait and wait because I hated invoicing. And then I'd send them an invoice, and they said, this is for 6 months' worth of shows. Are you nuts? I said, I'm sorry. I should have invoiced you sooner. Okay. Then Amber MacArthur, who was working with up there, told me about FreshBooks, and it really did change everything for me. Now, this is FreshBooks has been around, yes, for 10 years. Now 5 million people have used it. It is more now than just a way of making invoices, although that was the big lifesaver for me. It made it easy to invoice clients. I didn't wait till, 6 months of invoices had accumulated. I could email the invoices. Rogers liked to get them printed. FreshBooks would print them too, stamp it, do the whole thing. And I got paid faster. And that's really one of the keys to FreshBooks. On average, FreshBooks customers get paid 5 days faster. I'd say it's more than that. And if you get in a situation where somebody's late, you don't have to worry about it. Automated late payment reminders help you get paid faster and stay worry-free. But FreshBooks is much more now. You can organize expenses. You can track your time. The FreshBooks apps make it very easy to keep track of billable hours. You can have multiple rates, so it's easy to track your entire team. In fact, your whole team can use FreshBooks. It's easy to add clients, projects, and staff. FreshBooks integrates with your existing apps like MailChimp or PayPal, Google Apps, and more. And by the way, their customer support team has been voted the number one customer support team in the world. The FreshBooks support rock stars are free forever, and you will speak to a real-life human every single time. John Swee is a photographer who uses FreshBooks. Anybody that does freelance work, has their own business, really should know about FreshBooks. He says, FreshBooks is easy to work with and easy to learn. When I started, I loved it. I could just jump right in. And you know what? I'll echo that. That's exactly was my experience. This ability to organize expenses by taking pictures of receipts, that's new and that's great too. Wish I'd had that. Their iOS, Android device apps make it so easy to do all of this. You can track your time. You can invoice clients. And then, you know, when it comes time to do taxes, you send a report to your accountant. It's easy. Start 2014 fresh with FreshBooks.com. It's free for the first 30 days. Go to FreshBooks.com/TechGuy. And make sure you tell them you heard about it on the Tech Guy when they ask, would you? That's all I'd ask for you. FreshBooks.com/TechGuy. Start your 30-day free trial right now. And make sure you say, I heard about it on the Tech Guy when they ask. FreshBooks! Leo Laporte, the Tech Guy, 8888, Ask Leo. That's the number. Now, you may say, you may listen to me and say, Leo, sometimes I hear you recommend a Dell. Sometimes I'll, your Nexus 7. Sometimes I hear you recommend an iPad. What is it? Well, that, you know, it depends on the person. There really is no perfect technology for everybody. No generally everybody must get thing. And so what you're getting here is bespoke advice, my friends. You're getting custom-made, tailored advice to each and every caller. I listen. I don't just listen to the words. I listen beyond. I listen to the person behind the words, and I try to understand what the need is. And I think Rosalind is a good example of somebody who said right up front, I don't want to learn how to use a computer. I just want to get on the internet. Nothing better than the iPad for that, I have to say. 8888, Ask Leo. That's the phone number. Doug in Orange County, California. You're next. Hi, Doug.
Hi, Leo. How you doing?
I'm doing well. How are you?
I'm doing pretty good. A couple of quick notes. Happy belated birthday to you.
Thank you. That was a week ago, and I'm still 58. Don't understand it.
Well, you only got a couple on me, so.
Oy, yoy, yoy.
I got the 52nd coming up here in a couple weeks.
Yeah. After the big 5-0, you really should just stop counting.
But you have so much energy. We'll have to have that conversation another time. You're just as fun to listen to
the
air as you are on the air.
I am. You know what? I was watching Stevie Wonder in his mid-60s, and same thing. And you realize if somebody does what they love, they have energy. Right up till they don't. Anyway.
Well, maybe you just answer the question for me.
Okay.
I'm not doing what I'm supposed to be doing.
Do what you get's exactly right. Do what you love, the energy will follow.
I'll tell you, this is what I've got on my lap right now. Is I'm trying to help make a decision for my kid.
Okay.
He's 18. I'm kind of, I'm in the background trying to help him. I've got a couple of teenagers, another one not too far behind him.
Good for you, Dad. That's great.
Yeah, well, I've learned because I've just a little bit of my background. I went to a tech school.
Mm-hmm.
By the time I got out, I realized I was behind the eight ball, but I was too young and naive to understand that that's what happened to me until about 10 years later when I started reflecting that, they taught me a lot of stuff, and not to knock them, I won't mention the school, but I spent 2 years there, and
I'm going to, in their defense, it's almost impossible to teach technology and be, have it be up to date.
Exactly, and that's what I, why I'm calling you is to maybe help me cut the chase a little bit. I'm a tech guy from background, and your laser printer conversation really piqued my interest. I'm a laser printer guy by trade.
Awesome.
Ended up in but a little tidbit. Wozniak ended up taking the HP stuff, but then HP ended up taking the Canon engine, and HP's very first laser printer was a Series 1 printer, which was based on Canon technology.
Yeah, I think Canon didn't Canon invent the laser printer, basically? Because even the Apple laser writer used the Canon engine when it came out. Yeah,
exactly. Big, huge ink cartridge.
What an amazing invention. In fact, if you ever want to have your mind blown, and the world is full of mind-blowing things, but just look at how a laser printer, or even more crazy, how an inkjet printer works, and you will say, that can't. Yeah. That's not possible.
Yeah, it's I've enjoyed almost 15 years in that industry. So, but anyhow, I just thought that was interesting. They went on, HP marketed it way better than Canon and got way out in front of them. Anyhow, so I'm back to trying to help my kid get through school. Now with the advent of the internet, and I teach them very strongly, got all the information at your fingertips. I'm online and trying to figure out. I am also a converted Microsoft guy back from Windows 3.1.
Okay.
So I spent so many years being what I call myself a security guard for Bill Gates. And
we all had to be. So your son's 18. Is he thinking about a career in technology?
Yes, he is. He's getting into the game programming scene.
Oh, very good. Very exciting.
He's just finishing first semester with some intro to web design, which was excellent. I learned a bunch of stuff myself because I enjoyed dabbling in that area. But he's got next semester coming up with a game programming class. And as I'm doing research on his teacher and the curriculum, the syllabus, reading the syllabus and so on, he's very heavily, and no knock on him, he's a heavy Microsoft guy.
Right.
Very well plugged in, which is...
Yeah, you got to be careful because everybody has their favorite, their bias.
Right.
And does that mean it's the best thing for a kid to learn? We don't know. What is your kid... First of all, he's 18. So I could tell you one thing. When he gets into the workforce in 3 or 4 years and then project 10 years down the road, he'll only be 28. What's technology going to look like then? I don't know. It's not going to be, you know, and is he sure that game software is what he wants to do?
Oh, that's the thing. I think it's going to be a trial and error this first semester.
Yeah, you should try different things.
Yeah.
So let me say this. Learning programming is a skill that will always be valuable in the sense that knowing how a computer thinks and being able to get that computer to do what you want is a very, very valuable skill. Where that computer lives and what kind of computer it is going to change dramatically. It is not, if I were learning programming today, the last thing I'd learn is how to write for desktop computers, unless your goal is, well, I just want a job that I can, it's like learning laser printers. I just want a job I can settle in and do that for the next, you know, 10 years, and I'll worry about the future after that. Desktop computers are going away. We know that. It's obvious. There'll always be a market for desktop programmers. There's still a market for COBOL programmers, for Fortran programmers, but it's going to shrink.
Mm-hmm.
We also know that right now, if you were going to say, well, where could I cash in? If I want to be a, you know, I want to make the most money in the next 2 years, it would be app development. It would be developing games for iOS and Android, right?
Right.
Probably iOS if you want to make the most amount of money. But that, again, is a short-sighted goal. When you first learn programming, it's really good if you can afford it, if you have the time, afford it not just in money but in time. It would be best to learn programming from first principles as an art, as the art of expressing and solving a problem independent of hardware. It is a way of thinking. It's like learning, you know, in some ways it's like learning math, kind of abstract mathematics. It's because what happens is, of course, we get very pre-professional and say, well, I need to learn how to write in C sharp for Windows 7 and 8 because that's the market today. But that's if you're in a hurry, I guess, but it wouldn't be the best way. The best programmers learned the art of programming first. Now, he may not have the time. Sounds like he's in a technical school.
No, actually, community college.
Okay. Well, they tend to be more pragmatic and results-oriented. But programming is going through a massive change right now. Even the fundamental notion that has been deeply held for the last 20 years of object-oriented programming is under assault. The whole notion of programming is under assault. And really, at this point, learning how to program for the net, for a network environment, is probably the most forward-thinking thing. So there's two things I would say. One is, if you have the luxury, learn about programming in an abstract way as a concept, as how do I express a problem and then express the algorithm, solve it. That is, in all the great programming classes at MIT and Stanford and Duke and Cal Poly, they all kind of have this fundamental concept of understanding and expressing problems in a kind of abstract algorithm, you know, in a way that's not so specific to the hardware. But then you're going to get specific to the hardware. And at that point, I would say, again, if you have the time, the luxury, learn about programming for a distributed computing environment. It's not a specific desktop. I'll talk more in a bit. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Programming is not carpentry. That's the difference. Somebody said that's like learning carpentry in an abstract way. I agree that if you think of programming as carpentry, you should learn how to hammer a nail first. But it isn't. And if you program like a carpenter, you will rapidly get into a dead end. Because you can't build a program and then go, oh, crap. It's a much bigger global concept. It's more like being the contractor than the carpenter. This analogy doesn't work. It's not that. It's an art. It's more like writing a symphony. It's more like, it's an art. So I don't think it's a direct analogy at all to carpentry. It isn't. I mean, there are carpenters. There are lots of, and there is always a room for carpenter programmers, guys who can hammer together a beautiful structure. That's not a bad skill at all. And that's if you want to just say, I want to learn something and I want to get a job tomorrow, that's good. Because nobody's going to hire some guy who says, well, I understand the abstracts of expressing and solving problems. That's not a job skill. That's a fundamental skill that everyone should know, frankly, not just programmers. But that's a fundamental skill that then makes you a better carpenter. But if you need a job right away, you don't have that luxury. You got to learn how to carpentry. But you'll never be a great programmer that way, I don't think. And then the discipline of programming is a whole separate thing. No particular language is important. No particular operating system is important because all programming is the same fundamental stuff. So you could learn on a Mac. You could learn on a PC. You could learn Ruby. You could learn Python. You could learn, Lisp. You could learn, Scratch. That's not important because programming concepts are, you're learning some fundamentals. You're learning how to hammer a nail in a variety of different ways, but the specifics are going to change always. So learning how to think and how to and methodologies like for instance test-driven design, agile design, that kind of stuff. And the problem is these are very fad driven. So first of all, a professor at community college is not going to be teaching agile, almost certainly, because that's only in the last 20 years, and he's going to be teaching you something that's older than that. He's going to teach you, functional programming, because that's what most people do. In fact, there's still plenty of universities. We were talking about this in Austin. There are still – at University of Austin has a center where they teach programming to anybody with very specific goals of being a programmer. You come out of this two-year, three-year program, and you're a programmer, professional programmer. And it's very functional. It's a procedural programming, very old school. And in fact, they're teaching you methodologies that are like, and that's good. That's being a carpenter. You're learning to be the best possible carpenter. And there are lots of great programmers who started there and then took a step back and said, but let me think, more about test-driven design and stuff like this. Let me think more about agile. But if you have the luxury of learning from scratch and you have the time and money, because it kind of go together, ideally you would learn kind of the fundamentals of it first. Lee Elaford, the tech guy. We were talking about programming, and don't you get me started on this subject. I have strong philosophical beliefs. If you're – look, there are great programming schools. I was just talking about University of Texas has a really amazing program that is – that is pre-professional. The idea is you go in there, 2 years later, you come out of there, you are going to be able to get a job. And that's not, that's one whole thing. That's one whole way of thinking about it that is absolutely practical and good. I think the more luxury, if you have the luxury of time and money, the more abstract you get, the better, because you understand fundamental concepts and then can get specific. But it's not always the case, not even often the case that we have that luxury. So in which case, learning to program, Visual Basic on Microsoft Windows, that's fine. Programming's programming. And if you have a mind for it, you'll find ways to learn the other stuff later. Dickie D is here. He's Mad Magazine's maddest writer. And for many a year, isn't Mad celebrating its 60th anniversary?
Mad is up to 60 years. As unbelievable as that sounds.
That is amazing. Wow.
Yeah.
It actually, for those of us who grew up with it, it isn't that amazing. Mad was part of my childhood, so that just makes sense.
Well, I'm glad. Actually, it was way bigger with men and still is. You know, just know
it's like the
from
Three
the
Stooges.
Male. Yeah. Exactly.
Men like that kind of humor. I don't know why it is, but there you go. Dickie D is.
That was very interesting. The whole thing about. Logic and I knew carpentry and computers didn't go together when I tried to read stuff on my hard drive using a nail as a needle. I thought, you know what? This is not
computer science is not carpentry. Let's not confuse the two.
Exactly.
So Dick is not only a longtime Mad Magazine guy, probably one of the best known, most associated authors at Mad Magazine. He's part of that usual gang of idiots that you hear so often.
Proud to say it.
But he's also our own personal gadget guru, our gizwiz, for want of a better word.
Exactly. Always looking for weird stuff. And this wins for weird of 2014. Okay.
All right. I'm worried
now. The gadget is called Pavlok. And it's because of Pavlov, you know, the guy with the dogs that you train a dog. When you ring a bell, dinner's ready. And then after you start ringing the bell, the dog just starts salivating because
dogs, right.
Okay. So this is a way to break habits that you hate via electric shock. Okay. Do you like it already?
I have used it.
What?
Becky Worley, Good Morning America, brought it last Sunday. She brought a Pavlok watch in, and she said, "You want to see what it feels like?" I said,
"Oh, I did too."
It shocked me.
It really does.
I jumped. It's not lethal.
No, it's not.
But it's enough to get your attention.
It does. It really does.
It's like self-tasing.
Yes, that's exactly right. That's exactly right. So the object is you download the software, you buy the Pavlok, and then you download software, and then you put in that I must go to the gym once every day, and you tell the app what your gym is, and it uses GPS location to know if you went there on a particular day.
Yeah.
And if it doesn't, zap, you get zapped.
And then now it's to me it felt like a strong static shock or something. It's it's adjustable.
You know,
right?
Was she on full? Because it is variable.
I'm sure, knowing Becky, she made it all. She turned it all the way up.
Yeah. Did she make a stand in a pail of water?
No.
She did.
It hurt.
Yeah. Yeah. I took the medium shock.
There's a 110 and a 220, apparently.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. Exactly.
It was enough that I would do anything not to have it happen. And I guess that's the point, right?
It is the point. And they were just going on Indiegogo when I spoke to the guy with it. And I was interested to see, are people really interested in this? So they were looking for $50,000 and they got $254,000.
Yeah. There's definitely.
Now, this thing is not inexpensive. It's 200 bucks. It seems like, it looks like on Indiegogo, you might still get it for $169.
Yeah. But I don't know. If they've reached their funding, it might be over. Right?
You know what? On their own website, you can pre-order at $199, and it's not being delivered to May 2015.
Okay.
So you'll be as fat as a house by then.
What I played with, what you played with, is a prototype.
Yes, exactly. Right. Exactly.
A non-lethal prototype. Let's hope.
And it looks like they zeroed in now on selling it with the band. When I spoke to the guy said, the band might be extra. People might want to just tape it to their body. Well, I don't think so. He had his tape to his body, so he could shock himself right through his chest.
Wait a minute. But not his wrist, but other body parts can be shocked?
Yes, he had it on his chest. I thought, you know, if you get
no,
two
don't
of
put
them,
it close
could
to your heart. That's not.
No.
You could defibrillate.
I was just going to say, it's your oh, you're having a heart attack? Hang on. Let me let me not go to the gym, and I'll give you a shot.
I'll be back tomorrow.
I'll be back tomorrow. I'll shock you in 23 hours and 10 minutes.
But there are sensitive portions of the body where, like, if it weren't working on your wrist, you could trap it to your inner thigh.
Okay,
And you would really want to go to the gym then.
Yeah, you would. I'm tempted. Stop dating that thing in a minute.
I'm tempted, but I feel like.
Are you serious?
Well, I feel like I'm not so stupid that I wouldn't just. Well, I'm not going to go to the gym.
You know
Let
what?
Me take
Look,
the watch off.
When the guy was developing it, he had somebody slap him in the face every time he went on Facebook. Okay? So the thing is, Leo, I bet there are people who work for you who would be willing to do that. So
oh,
you
I think almost everybody who works for me would be willing to do slap me in the face.
You could save $200.
Yeah, that's a good idea.
I don't know what this is.
Well, doesn't like Tony Robbins, I mean, don't they say just wear a rubber band and snap it? Or, you know, I mean, there's all sorts of ways to do that.
Oh,
rubber band
okay. Well,
is like.
That's the analog version.
Oh.
You don't want that.
Somebody told me when we were talking about that, there's a app where you say, if I don't go to the gym, I will pay $5. And if I do go to the gym, I'll get $2 or something like that. The money you pay goes into a pool.
For some reason, I think that's part of this app because in the little one-minute promo thing, it said, you can get money, you can pay fines if you don't go to the gym. So maybe you can incorporate that into your regimen for doing what you should be doing.
Jeff Needles is in our staff is doing it. It's called Gym Pact, GYMPACT.
Oh, okay.
But and then I mentioned, I told Lisa, I thought, well, I could do that. She said, just give me $100 if you don't go to the gym. I said, oh, that's interesting.
Wow.
Yeah.
Interesting.
I haven't made that deal yet.
No, I wouldn't.
I feel like it would cost me. It has to be enough so that you would prefer to go to the gym than pay the money, right?
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah, $100 would do it. So, Pavlok, if you don't yet have it, where do you go?
You go to pavlok.com and you can pre-order it. But again, delivering in May 2015,
right.
So like 6 months away.
I'm always hesitant to recommend these things because...
Oh, yeah, 340 volts is the max.
What?
That's what it says.
340 volts?
Up to 340 volts.
As we know, it's not the volts, it's the amperage.
Exactly.
That'll kill you. So,
yeah, the amperage has to be low.
It should be low. What does it say?
It doesn't say. It just.
And has the FDA ruled in on this yet?
Oh, I wonder.
We would like to sell.
Has Con Ed said anything?
We would like to sell a consumer electrocution device. Can we get approval for that? Nobody will die in most cases.
In most cases.
You know who?
No, it seems very chancy to me, but it was wild enough to have to talk about.
Love it. Pavlok, Pavlok. Dick's website, GIZWIZ.biz, is the place to go to learn more about the Pavlok and all of the fun stuff he talks about, not just on this show, but on ABC's World News Now, Craig's Computer America, his very own. You have your very own show called The Gizwiz. every Thursday on our podcast network. And if you go to gizwiz.biz, you'll also get to play the What the Heck Is It contest. Are we out of time? Dick, thank you so much.
Okay, see you.
I will see you next week. Leo Laporte, the tech guy. Have a great geek week. Well, that's it for the Tech Guy show for today. I'm Leo Laporte. Thank you so much for joining us. Don't forget, the Tech Guy is just the tip of the iceberg. We do nearly 30 shows now on the Twit Netcast Network, and you'll find them all at twit.tv. We talk about Windows on Windows Weekly, Macintosh on Mac Break Weekly, iPad on iPad Today. You get your daily dose of tech news from Tech News Today and our weekly roundtable show, This Week in Tech. It's all at twit.tv. And I'll be back next time with another great Tech Guy podcast. Thanks for joining me. See you next time.